Hello, fellow citizens, and welcome to an Independence Day edition of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with Pastors Bob Thune and Dusty White of Corumdale Church, and Pastor Chris Hummelman from First City Church in Bellevue, Nebraska. Every Wednesday, we sit down and talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, in light of Independence Day, we're talking about the vanishing American adult.
Man, that's like the most patriotic intro we've ever had right there. Yeah, buddy. Hey, we're going to spend a podcast or two giving our reflections on Ben Sasse's book recently released, which is titled The Vanishing American Adult. We like Ben. He's our senator. He's a member of a sister church of ours, or a church that we're friendly with. And he's a thoughtful dude, a Christian working in the public sphere, living convictionally and laying down, I think, some interesting thoughts. So why not? We're going to talk about his book. Maybe this is on your summer reading list. If it's not, it might be a good book to pick up. I certainly think it's thought-provoking. Although he is self-consciously writing as a Christian, it's a book about culture. It's a book about America. It's a book about what we need to sort of shift our national spirit and dialogue. And so it's sort of a book that's accessible to all kinds of different folks. And I think that's winsomely written. Guys, what are your, we've all got the book around the table. We have not read this book all the way through in the sense that we're going to critique it. We are in the midst of reading it. So I'm about halfway through. Dusty, I think you're about a third of the way through.
Mm-hmm.
Hellman's reading the ebook or the listening to the audio book.
I have a limited amount of space on my bookshelves right now. So yeah. Everything is electronic right now.
Electronically
limited space.
Diving into it.
Which Ben actually has a book or a chapter about, building a bookshelf.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. You probably need to get to that chapter.
I would say The Vanishing American Adult it's a parent book. I mean, you wouldn't go to the parent section to find it, but if you're a parent, I mean, it's almost a must read.
Yeah, here's the interesting thing that Ben Sasse is doing. If you want to understand this book, you start with the postscript, which is, the postscript is titled, Why This Wasn't a Policy Book. And he's saying, hey, look, I'm a senator. You might have expected me to write a policy book. Like, here's what we should do to change American policy. Here's why I didn't do that. And what he says is, because first we have to agree on what the problem is before it makes any sense to talk about solutions. So this isn't a book of solutions. This is a book trying to frame what's the problem. And Ben Sasse says the problem, the subtitle of this book is Our Coming of Age Crisis. So he wants to say the problem is we're not making healthy adults anymore. And so, Dusty, you're right. It is a parenting book in the sense that he's envisioning what would it mean for us to be raising the kind of people and educating and training and developing the kind of people who can be healthy citizens. And that's what we're failing to do. That's a parent concern. That's a societal concern. That's an educational concern. Everybody who has an interest in what the future citizens of America are like should care about this question. And so in a sense, he's just trying to define the problem. Now, you may disagree with his statement of the problem. You may say, no, I think the problem in America is something else. But he's trying to say, hey, underneath all of the sort of issues and challenges in our culture is the fact that we have a coming of age crisis. We're not making good adults. And therefore, let's talk about that problem.
What I like about what Sasse is doing here, really what I like about him overall as a politician, even though that's kind of a dirty word, is he's an old school statesman and very much writing in the tradition of even going back all the way to like ancient Rome, where you had these guys that cared about the culture and how that was being passed down to the next generation, in the sense that if we want to keep this sense of freedom, we want to keep the sense of civility and all of these cultural values that make our nation a thriving place, that we need to care about how we're passing these things down. So even though, as you said, Bobby's writing self-consciously as a Christian, what he's doing here is a little bit more broad and kind of stands in the tradition of great statesmen of the past and those that, you know, care about a culture. So it's just a really well done. As far as I've gone.
Statesman is a good term for him.
Yeah.
I was talking
to
a friend recently. I mean, I'm very cynical about politics. I was talking to a friend who's equally cynical, and he goes, hey, Sasse is actually the kind of guy that could make me care about politics again. Because it's not partisan and hacky. He's laying down some thoughtful principles and saying, can we talk about what it means to have a republic? Mm-hmm. And so you're right. It's sort of getting upstream to some of the idea and virtue and shaping realities that have to be present if we're going to have any meaningful conversation about policy or about politics.
And he very much has that kind of teacher educator heart. He's not like he doesn't lecture people on things. He's just like, hey, these principles matter. And whenever I see an interview with him talking about it, he's trying to very much appeal to the better sense of our common decency, our common virtue, and try to sort of raise the water level, so to speak, of like, hey, as Americans, there's some things that have made this nation great, and we need to return to those things and make America great again, but in a different way. I think in a much more helpful way.
What is his solution to making America great again, for the lack of a better term? Like, what is his premise here?
Well, here, I mean, to Dusty's point, the chapter titles have a lot to do with how we're forming kids. So he talks about fleeing age. So these are actually all principles that relate to if you have kids, or if you're educating kids, or if you're around kids, here's the things you should be doing. One, flee age segregation. In other words, get your kids around old people. Two, embrace work pain. Help your kids learn how to work hard. Three, consume less. So be producers, not consumers. Work against the dominant consumption narrative in American culture. Four, travel. Five, read. Build a bookshelf. And then his sixth sort of prescription is make America an idea again, which gets down to some of the bedrock principles of what does it mean to have a republic. And so he's saying we're not passing on basic civics. You know, in that chapter sort of mentions there's these projects, these think tanks that do, like, let's take all the college seniors and see how well they know civics. And he's like, most of them can't name the three branches of government. I mean, most of them don't know the most basic things about American political system. And so it's sort of a chapter on why we need to care about kids just understanding how our country works. So those are his prescriptions. They really all do have to do with how we're shaping the next generation of citizens. And so, you know, Ben Sasse is in his 40s. He has kids who are teenagers, and I think his youngest is like 6. So he's very much thinking as a person trying to shape the next generation, and probably as a leader thinking about how do we solve the problems for our kids and grandkids, not just for the next 2 years.
So Dusty, as you've read through the book, what have you said as a parent? You know, parents should read this book. What things for you as a parent have been like, I need this, or my kids need this?
Well, I think what's been helpful is that you have somebody outside the church saying exactly what we've been feeling and saying, which is to what Bob said, to create virtue, to create work ethic, to create responsibility. He has a couple big points that he continues to hit throughout the book, like resist consumption. I just had a conversation with my son, who's turning 14 soon, and he is under the impression that he's going to be needing a phone. And so at 14, when you don't have a phone, you're like, you're just a weirdo right now if you don't have a phone at 14. So we talked around the need for this, and then we talked around how, like, just culturally drifting through life in 2017 apparently means that you need a phone. And so I'm trying to have those kinds of conversations at home, and Ben Sasse is helpful in those conversations, because he's saying you have to create adults right now under your roof. You're going to have to figure out how to pump the brakes a little bit on all the things that kids are thinking they need. And that they're just kind of, he says, they're just like wide-eyed zombies floating through life. And so those are the kinds of things that he brings up that are just helpful as parents that we have to think intentionally about.
How does he define adult? You guys keep saying it's this movement towards adulthood. What is that?
Okay, so the first few pages of his book are clever, because he talks about, I remember.
Hashtag adulting.
Yeah, hashtag adulting, which this was a thing on Twitter and Instagram about a year or two ago. You know, people were into this, like, hashtag adulting. And mm-hmm. So he says people would say, like, doing laundry / dishes, hashtag adulting. You know, and he would say, and so he starts the whole book by saying, apparently, adulting is a thing now that's a verb. You know, it's mm-hmm. not like being adult is not a noun. Adulting is a verb that means acting like an adult, even if you're not one. And mm-hmm. so he just sort of is poking fun at this, like, obviously our thinking about even what it means to be an adult has sort of shifted. And what he's saying is that, you know, And remember, Ben Sasse has a PhD in history. So he's a thoughtful historian. And one of the best things about this book is it just helps you go, oh, this is how we got to where we are. Like it's not like a curmudgeonly book where he's like, dang it, kids don't know how to work anymore. You know, he's saying, hey, here's some shifts that have taken place in the last 120 years that have dramatically affected how we think about work and how we think about adolescence. And so he says, you know, adolescence used to be this phase of preparing kids to be independent adults. And so it was seen as this transition from you're a child under someone else's authority to you're an adult who is responsible for yourself. And societies had ways of helping kids transition in that way. Now we've gone in this direction of perpetual adolescence where you have people, he says, you know, the number one zip code for men in their 20s is their parents' house, you know, and it's just like you have this perpetual extended adolescence where instead of doing the kinds of things that force kids to grow up, there's no launch pad for them anymore. And so I guess to answer your question simply, Mike, he's essentially saying we need to get back to a jumping off point where we're saying, okay, kids, you're adults now, or at least a jumping off phase where we're saying we're preparing you now to enter into the world responsibly as citizens, as workers, as leaders, and as those responsible for yourself. And that's where the tension and the struggle really lies.
Not that this is necessarily a new struggle in some ways, but I can remember even growing up and hitting that phase where in teenage years, moving towards college, moving out of your parents' home, where we often want the freedom of adulthood, but we don't want the responsibility of adulthood. And so what are some of the highlights that he talks about that you guys found interesting related to how our culture has sort of elevated the freedoms of adulthood? Like how that really, in some ways there's been like steroids injected into that, where that becomes so much more of a temptation and a desire and kind of moving away maybe from some of the responsibilities of adulthood.
Yeah, well, the privileges of adulthood would be things like, you know, being able to make a living for myself. And so even the whole living with mom and dad when I'm 25 is like, I'm not responsible to pay my own bills. I'm sort of like still hanging out under their roof. So that'd be one example. Mm-hmm. I don't know what others come to mind, Dusty.
Yeah, when he talks about work ethic, he says, your aim is to become free to work with delight rather than seeking to be free from work. And I think, you know, everything's living for the weekend. Everything's all about Fridays. And I just kind of cringe inside when I hear that stuff because, no, actually adulting, hashtag adulting, is being free to
enjoying
work.
Your
like
work.
You now have this. He talks a lot about rite of passage between these different stages of life. So when you're becoming a baby to the adolescence, then adolescence to adulthood, he says there needs to be clear rite of passage where people are actually influencing you into these next stages. And you need to have conversations about it and talk about it. And so I think what we have now, the reason for the book is he's saying people are going off to college and then returning home to their parents' basements because they don't really want the responsibility of growing up and using that education. They're just not quite sure what they want to do yet. So they're going to kick the tires for a while and just do that thing because it's there.
Yeah, the rite of passage thing is interesting to me too, because with that is this idea that I have to earn a certain status. I have to do this work, that there is this sort of sacred either body of knowledge or process by which I need to go through, and I actually honor that process, where in many ways that's been lost, and there's really no desire or honoring for that. It's like, I want to graduate from college, 4-year degree. I expect to be immediately making, you know, $100,000 a year, where in the past it was start at the bottom and rite of passage and work my way up. And that process was both honorable and in some ways it's like the person who was making $100,000, you recognize, hey, they worked to get there. They know stuff. They have a knowledge base. They have experience. And so there was an honor that even came with that for those who had achieved that process. So even, you know, that's a concept that has been striking to me here too.
Here's what he says. Most of our millennials have the intelligence to navigate the bumps that are coming, but only if we also instill in them the grit that the new era of uncertainty will demand. So what he's saying is like, they're smart enough to work. They just don't have the work ethic or just even the drive. They don't have the ambition, the urgency.
It's interesting because as we've taught on masculinity at like men's retreats in the past,
I've always tried, I've been fascinated by how do different cultures help a boy become a man. And one of the things you see sociologically is that in almost every culture, manhood is achieved, right? Mm-hmm. So think about it. It's like when you kill your first animal, or it's when you, like, there's elaborate tribal cultures in Africa that have these like circumcision ceremonies where boys that are 12 or 14, that's when you're circumcised. And it's like, if you shed a tear, you're not a man. Like there's very elaborate rituals of like, you're proving toughness, determination, you know, adulthood in some sense. And so in a sense, that not just has masculinity been achieved, but I think in every culture, adulthood has sort of been achieved. It's like you cross clear boundaries that say, I can now, you know, provide for myself. And it's those clear markers that are sort of going away. And what I like about Sass as a historian is he chronicles, for instance, he says, think about my great grandparents who emigrated to Canada from Norway. And I have in my house their sort of like life story that one of their kids wrote down, which is a really fascinating thing to read. But nine girls and a boy. All of their kids, you know, as soon as they were like 9 or 10 years old, were working on the farm doing something. They were repairing equipment, or they were feeding animals, or they were just immediately brought along in work, in addition to needing to go to school and learn the alphabet and learn how to read and whatever. So there was this sort of education took two forms. It took the reading, writing, and arithmetic form at the local schoolhouse, but it also took learning how to work alongside mom and dad on the farm. And what Sass says is because of the Industrial Revolution and urbanization and even sort of the growth of public education and the compulsory attendance laws, what we've done is we've just taken out of any teenager's life the ability to work. In fact, you'll find as your kids grow up, it's really hard to find a job for a 15 or 16 year old. Like there's only certain things they can even do. Whereas in the past, if you were 13, you'd have been working on the farm pretty hard. Mm-hmm. And so we're continuing to do the reading and writing and arithmetic part of education, but kids are no longer having to learn the beauty of work, diligence, labor, sweat. And that had been a rite of passage. You know, it's sort of like when you sort of got to that place, like
when you're tall enough to drive a car,
exactly.
You will.
when I read my great grandfather's story, there was, you know, his one son who was like, you know, he grew up with nine sisters. He's the one boy. And like the rite of passage for him was like, he got a pair of trousers when he was like 12. And that was like your sign that like, you don't have to wear shorts anymore. Like little boys, you get a pair of like big boy pants. And it was sort of like this very significant moment in his life where they're saying like, you're big enough now to like contribute and work. And we expect you to like take responsibility for the family. And those are the things that are going away. Sure. And as a result, without those sort of gates that you have to go through to step into adulthood, it's sort of like, well, I guess graduating from high school and then graduating from college, those are the only two like significant markers we still have that sort of say you're transitioning in some way.
And even those, so not to take away from those accomplishments, because they are accomplishments. You have to do work, you have to put in time. But even those, in some ways, if you think of, especially if I graduated from college, like the whole experience of college, very little seems to be setting you up for adult life. I mean, okay, I'm going to...
Safe spaces.
Yeah, safe spaces. Or, what is the stereotype college experience? I go to class, I get drunk on the weekends, and if I'm sober enough, I show up in class. Or, you know, hookup culture. Like, it's this... Even the way that those things are supposed to be preparing us have been shot through more and more with an adolescent flair, for lack of a better term. And so even our current markers are don't have that kind of rite of passage, that grit, that, you know, hardworking, I'm going to prepare you for something very deep and meaningful that actually teaches me to deny myself. Cause so much in college anymore is not that. So,
well, and that's one of Sass's important points, is that ability to deny myself. That's what citizenship requires. It requires, I'm a part of a bigger thing, and I'm sacrificing for the common good. And he says, as our culture has shifted from agrarian to sort of urban, like on the farm, it was really clear, if you're working alongside dad at 12 and we got to get this harvest in, like, it's not about you. It's about getting this harvest in so we can have food for the winter, right? And there's a very clear, like, I don't get to complain about whether I can watch cartoons, you know, or whatever. But that our culture has shifted to become very child-centered, which essentially has made us soft. You know, we're used to sort of being coddled instead of being forced to learn how to deny ourselves. And so self-denial is a category that is, it's just like, it's sort of dramatic in how people learn it because they've never been, or the, in large measure, they're not being taught it from early ages.
And as a historian, what's helpful to me in this book is he's saying, you know, you didn't have that decision to make at 13. Now we have all these, like, kids have all these decisions to make. Like, well, what school am I going to go to? What am I interested in? And so he's saying they're overwhelmed, they're anxious, all these things are happening because they have all these choices ahead of them. And he's saying, man, that wasn't the case. You just grew up on the farm. Farming is what you did. And you didn't have to, you didn't have to pick. You didn't have to choose. You didn't have to be overwhelmed or guided into those things. And then what he's saying now is that young adults now, if they're going to work, they're not going to just change jobs. They're going to change fields three times in a decade, statistically, which is just crazy to think about. Well, I'm going to be a welder, then I'm going to be a teacher, and then I'm like, it's just kind of like a smorgasbord, and they didn't have to face that because it was just handed to them. And so maturing was just natural. And so now we have to help kids mature, and that's the work of the parents. Quick story. My son started mowing lawns this summer. So he's got three or four lawns that he's mowing. I bought him a used mower on Craigslist. And, when he got to a certain dollar amount, I didn't make him pay. This is a sidebar. I didn't make him pay, but I said, hey, let me know when you have $500. And then we kept the $500 in his bank account. And then I actually bought the mower. But, basically I was saying, when you reach this goal, let me know. Just as an incentive. I didn't take his $500. But we did other things with it. But, well, the other day it broke.
The mower did?
Yeah. I kept waiting for this Craigslist mower to break. But because I was like, this thing's running way too well. Like, what's going on here? This Craigslist find is, like, awesome, which is unheard of. But he grabbed his mom's phone. He texted me and he said, hey, the mower won't start. So I thought for a minute. I responded and I said, fix it. All caps. And that was it. And then I came home, there's tools all over the place. And then he goes, I think it's the solenoid. And I said, how do you know it's the solenoid? And he said, well, if I stick this screwdriver in the solenoid, it'll jumpstart. And I was like, oh, I think you might be right. Cause that means it's not the starter. And so like the fulfillment of him being able to realize at 13, like I can fix this and I can go, if I fix it, I can go work with it and I can make money with it and I can contribute a little bit, you know, to something. And so, and what's weird about that is I feel like a weird parent right now in 2017.
You are.
Saying.
compared to the culture.
I feel like saying, well, nope, you don't get a phone yet.
You don't get a brand new mower because it broke.
You need to go do something.
Here's what the people down the street do. They just sell that broken mower and go buy a new one.
Yeah. And I'm like, no, you're going to earn some stuff. And I just feel like Ben Sass is helpful here to me because he's saying I'm not crazy, yeah. But it feels like my kid's kind of growing up in a crazy world because I'm enforcing these kinds of things upon him.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about this as a, if you ask how should Christians that are listening to this sort of relate to this book? Well, one, it's just an interesting book to read culturally, but I think it's interesting to think of this as sort of part of your, a contribution to your parenting curriculum alongside books like Shepherding a Child's Heart, which we've recommended for years, more on the spiritual side and discipline side. But what Sass is really doing is giving you a vision for like your kids. And it's interesting that actually I was sitting there reading this book alongside my wife, Ted Tripp in Shepherding a Child's Heart has basically three stages. He says, here's your goal from 0 to 5, from 6 to 12, and from 12 to 18. There's, you know, it's sort of discipline, responsibility, and I can't remember what the third one is, independence maybe, it's discipline, character, and then responsibility. And he says, you know, 0 to 5, you're teaching discipline and authority. 6 to 12, you're building character. And 12 to 18, you're trying to transition them into responsibility. Sass basically has those same three categories. He says they go all the way back to the Romans. And there's these three, there's basically 0 to 6, 7 to 12, 13 to 18. Those are your three sort of categories of childhood. And so I think this can be a really helpful book to Christian parents who just want to have a vision for parenting and say, okay, how do I start with my three-year-old and think about what they're going to be, what am I aiming them toward when they're 18? Mm-hmm. You know, that's healthy parenting is to say, if I'm entrusted with children, I can't just try to make it through the next week or the next year. I got to have a vision for like, who am I trying to turn them into? And what kinds of things do I need to sort of get ahead of? And I think Ben Sass's book can be helpful to parents in that regard of just helping give a vision for, especially in those adolescent years, here's the transitions we're looking to make and here's how we can help to prepare them for them.
This is a helpful line to me when we're talking about adolescence. Adolescence was intended as a greenhouse phase in which the oldest children could be protected as they worked through the last struggle of maturation. And that's really what it is. Like when you're a teenager and you're pre 25, you're in this struggle of maturation, but there's this environment where like, hey, no, mom and dad got this. You're under the roof. You're fine. You're provided for. But at the same time, we're going to load you up a little bit so that you can grow up. The literal term means to grow up, right?
Yeah. And he talks about thinking about adolescence as a training, you know, taking the training wheels off. You know, you're like learning to be on your own, and that culturally that's what we're losing. We're losing that sense of adolescence as preparation for adulthood. And so we end up with hashtag adulting, where people are acting like adults but not learning how to become them. And that's a significant problem. So I think we'll tackle a part two of this podcast and talk about a couple specific features of this book, specifically SAS's focus on education, on consumption, and on travel. And then maybe next week we'll look at a few of the critiques of this book and how they maybe ask some good questions of the propositions that SAS is laying down. So we'll come back to this next week.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in, and we pray that the things that we talked about might also be helpful to you as you minister in your own context. And we hope that you join us next week for another Wednesday conversation.